Good mornings, I'm Chris Oaks, and coming up today, with less than 2 months until Election Day, Ohio GOP Chairman Alex Triantafilou joins us ahead of his address at the Hancock County Republicans' First Friday Luncheon. Also this morning, in honor of Friday the 13th, the kind of spine-tingling tales we love to share around the campfire from the Big Book of Ohio Ghost Stories. The Findlay Trojans look to even up their record at Oregon Clay tonight. We'll get a preview of all this week's high school football action and a collection of recipes featuring the flavors of fall from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, September 13th, 2024. So do you buy into all of the Friday the 13th superstition thing? I have to wonder, why do we think this? Why is it Friday? And I've said many times, it seems to me that Monday the 13th should be the day that we fear. I mean, it's Friday. How bad could it be? Mondays, on the other hand, Monday the 13th makes a whole lot more sense to me, but... Tradition holds that Friday the 13th is unlucky, and there are a lot of superstitions surrounding Friday the 13th in general, just superstitions in general. You ever wonder where they came from? Things like walking under a ladder or letting a black cat cross your path, not breaking a mirror, give you 7 years of bad luck. Oh, you know, all of those things. A lot of them actually date back to ancient times, like, for example, walking under a ladder. I'm told, and this was a piece on the Live Science website, livescience.com. They were explaining some of the history of some of these things that we think of as bad luck today. And walking under a ladder dates back to ancient Egypt when, because if you think about it, a ladder leaning against a building forms a triangle with the side of the building, the ground, and the ladder. It's triangle, and triangles were regarded as a sacred shape in ancient Egypt, hence the pyramids. And then walking underneath the ladder meant breaking the trinity, the shape of the triangle, and that was to desecrate the sacred shape. So that is one example. Opening an umbrella indoors. I said it actually dates back not quite to ancient Egypt, but in the early days of umbrellas. I guess this was in Europe. The mechanics of an umbrella were such that it was tough to open them, and if you did so indoors, you might break something or you might hurt someone. So that's how we got that. So anyway, they go into the whole thing. Many of them date back all the way to ancient Egypt. But and black cats, again, in ancient times, cats were considered sacred animals. In some cases, the reincarnation of human beings, loved ones, as cats. They were revered, but black cats eventually became associated with witches, and so you don't want to let a black cat cross your path. And anyway, that's it's fascinating history of superstitions and why we think the way we do about all of these things. But if you buy into such things, I don't, of course, but just in case, we are hunkered down in the bunker today, because why tempt fate? So the big news this week, after the debate, Taylor Swift's endorsement of Kamala Harris, which of course took nobody by surprise. Experts who follow her writings say the posts to social media show that the pop star is maturing. Professor at UT Austin, Elizabeth Scala, actually teaches a course on Taylor Swift at the university. There is a course on Taylor Swift, and she says the messaging of Taylor Swift endorsing Kamala Harris will resonate with fans who have grown up with her and are now, as she is, of age to, you know, start flexing their political muscles. But overall, will it have an impact, Taylor Swift's endorsement of Kamala Harris? Well, a spokesperson, take this for what it's worth, a spokesperson for the General Services Administration, the GSA, says in the first 12 hours after Taylor Swift posted her endorsement, more than 306,000 people clicked on the link that she shared to register to vote. Doesn't necessarily mean all 306,000 of them will vote like Taylor Swift tells them to vote, but at the very minimum, she can be credited or blamed, however you look at it, for registering more than 250,000 people to vote. So, again, make of that what you will, but I thought it was kind of interesting. One of the other big news stories this week, the first all-civilian spacewalk is a success. SpaceX launched four people into orbit on Tuesday morning as part of their Polaris Dawn mission, and they made history yesterday. American billionaire Jared Isaacman, who paid for the trip, by the way, became the first to exit the Dragon capsule on a tether and step forward into the vacuum of space. I said the other day, that's how brave do you have to be to step out of a spaceship? I wouldn't even skydive. I wouldn't even parachute. I think it's crazy to step out of a perfectly good airplane within the Earth's gravitational pull. I can't imagine the kind of courage that it would take to step out of a perfectly good spacecraft in outer space. At the very least, Jared Isaacman was the first. Sarah Gillis was the next person to follow him out in his spacewalk. If I was going to do it, I'd want to be the second. You know, how about you do it first, and we'll see if you float away into the void of space, and if you don't float away, then I might think about it. You know what I mean? That would be... But anyway. But it's in the books now, the first civilian spacewalk. Crazy. A couple of other items here among the first things you need to know. Most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. This is big news. 8 new emoji are coming to your phones next year. They have apparently been approved by the Unicode Consortium, the people who track all of these things and issue the standards for all things in the digital universe that allow different computers and mobile devices and everything to communicate with each other in a standardized format. Total number of Unicode characters with the addition of these new emoji will climb to 154,998, nearly 155,000 different characters. Not all of them emoji, but this is a big deal. It's the way computers and mobile devices and digital platforms can all talk to each other. So this is big. The new characters, the new emoji that are coming next year, include a face with bags under the eyes, a human fingerprint, a paint splatter, a root vegetable, a leafless tree, a harp, a shovel, and the flag of Sark. All right. So those are the new emoji that are coming in 2025. You can get excited about that. The human fingerprint, I think, is that's a good one. And the leafless tree, fall and winter, that kind of makes sense. But face with bags under the eyes. In today's digital world, that is, a lot of us can relate to that, That's, yeah. And finally, here among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. You remember last month when... in the Olympic Games, the big controversy had to do with Jordan Chiles and whether or not she would be able to keep her bronze medal. Originally, she was scored off of the podium, and then they protested. They got the score recalculated. She won the bronze, and the girl from, where was it? I don't even remember, protested that, and the arbiters reversed it and gave her the bronze medal, and Jordan Chiles had to give hers back. It was the big controversy, right? Well, rapper Flava Flav, has given Jordan Chiles her own bronze clock necklace as a makeup for the bronze medal that she lost. This actually was pretty cool. It happened at the MTV Video Music Awards this week. He presented Jordan Chiles with a diamond encrusted necklace. It was bronze. And it says here the gift came after Chiles was stripped of her bronze medal at the Summer Olympics in Paris following a scoring appeal dispute. Jordan Chiles said, "I don't even know what to say. Thank you so much." She said she is still seeking peace and justice after losing her medal. But this will help, I would imagine. This will make it a little bit easier. That's awful doggone nice of Flavor Flav. You remember the popular rapper? He was the big cheerleader for the women's water polo team and financed all of their trip to Paris and bought them all kinds of training materials and, you know, training equipment and all of that. And so he really went all in for the Olympic athletes. And now trying to make it up to Jordan Chiles. Is a great guy. That is terrific stuff. So there you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started.
WFIN News. I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. It'll be partly sunny today with a high in the mid-80s, partly cloudy tonight, a low around 60. A big box retailer's plan to build a store at the location of the Findlay Village Mall is coming to fruition. The City Planning Commission has approved the application for a new 131,000-square-foot retail big box store at 1800 Tiffin Avenue, the location of the mall. However, the name of the big box retailer still has not been released.
The company has requested that we wait a little bit longer as they continue to work through their internal processes, but it's exciting and it's something that we've been working on for quite a while, so hopefully the community will be happy and we look forward to announcing it, and as soon as we can, we certainly will.
That's Findlay Mayor Christina Mern. She says the middle section of the mall will be demolished to make way for the new store. Get more details in this story on our website. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine has committed more than $2 million to the city of Springfield, just east of Dayton, for what he calls an unprecedented increase in migrants that is straining city resources.
The governor says in the last few years, there have been 15,000 migrants settling in Springfield. He says many of them are from Haiti and here on temporary protected status due to the violence in that country. The governor also committed $2.5 million for health care. He says many of the migrants have never had adequate care, are in need of vaccines, and the increase in population has put a strain on local doctors and hospitals.
ONN's Carla Rogner reporting. Findlay Municipal Court is providing people with driver's license restrictions an opportunity to resolve their issues. The 6th annual Findlay Municipal Court DOS Day Clinic will be held on Thursday, October 10th. The goal of the clinic is to help people resolve their legal issues and get back on the road legally. Appointments are preferred, but walk-ins are welcome. For more details or to set up an appointment, you can call the clerk's office. We have the number in the story on our website. Officials say some people may even leave their appointment with their driving privileges restored. Get more information on the Municipal Court's DOS Day Clinic in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So you check the calendar, we are about 50-some-odd days from the November election. And as we count down to Election Day, the chairman of the Ohio GOP will speak to Hancock County Republicans later today at their first Friday luncheon. Alex Triantafilou is with us this morning to talk more about that. And Alex, thanks very much for taking the time. First of all, we appreciate it.
Well, Chris, good morning. Good to be with you. And you're right. It's 52 days until Election Day, but 25 days until early voting begins here in Ohio. So we are right in the middle of it, sir.
Absolutely. Let me start with the big story of the week. Of course, that being the presidential debate on Tuesday. Share your reaction to what we saw on the stage.
Well, I thought President Trump did well. And of course, I'm biased, but I know what the pundits are saying, but Chris, here's what I've told everyone who's asked me about the debate. If you ask me what is Kamala Harris's policy to fix inflation, I don't have an answer after watching that debate. If you ask me what Donald Trump's policy changes would be, it would be to unleash the energy sector so we can drive down the cost of energy, which should drive down the cost of goods. That's a policy. That is a policy that Donald Trump has long advocated. It came out during the debate. Mm-hmm. If you ask me, what is Kamala Harris's policy to fix the southern border? I watched this discussion, and all I heard about was the opportunity economy. She never explained the opportunity economy to me or to anybody listening. She presented well. She, you know, on style points, perhaps she did okay. Mm-hmm. But I didn't hear a policy prescription. Donald Trump's policy prescription has long been out there for the American people in immigration. It's pretty simple. Build a wall is the beginning of the conversation. So I didn't hear any policy prescriptions or solutions to the problems that Americans face. And frankly, that's why I think since the debate, we haven't seen any major shift in the polls. I think people are largely where they are. So I thought President Trump did fine. And I know, you know, I know a lot of the punditry out there is suggesting that, you know, it went better for her only because she hasn't had a conversation with the American people really since accepting this. And, you know, she probably outperformed expectations.
You bring up a point that has been made even by some Democrats that the Harris campaign has been short on details when it comes to policy positions. But also with respect to the debate, so much has been made of President Trump's comments about Springfield that have it's been what's going on in Springfield with the Haitian immigrants there. It's been a lot of pushback from local officials in Springfield, even statewide. The governor talked about it the other day. Was that really helpful to amplify those conspiracy theories to the point where it seemed as though that sort of overshadowed some of those high points for the president?
Well, so I see it differently. I really do. And then here's why I see it differently. We have now been talking about the Haitian immigration crisis here in Ohio, right in Clark County, now for 3 days. That's what we've been talking about. And if you're hearing things about, you know, eating pets and some of the other, you know, kind of more salacious things that are coming out of Springfield and out of Clark County, you know, that's a part of it. And I, you know, that's not something I'm going to sit here and peddle in or deal with. But I am going to say this: in his own very unique way, Donald Trump now has created a national conversation about what happens when 20,000 Haitian immigrants descend upon a community of 60,000 people in, you know, essentially rural Ohio. So, it's an important discussion to have. And we've now had it for 3 days. And whether we call it hyperbole or whatever anyone wants to call it, Donald Trump has this unique ability to shine the light on these kind of problems. And, you know, he did it when he first ran for president by saying we're going to build a wall and make Mexico pay for it. And everybody sort of chuckled at the president. But guess what? Immigration became a national topic. And you know what else? Donald Trump was 100% right. We've seen what's happening to the United States as people flood over our southern border, where we have a broken border and a broken immigration system. So, you know, in that way, let the chatter go on about what's going on in Springfield, because we should shine the light of day on what's happening there, because it's hurting Ohioans and hurting people in Clark County.
I get exactly what you're saying, and it is a point well taken. This is an important issue, and again, I think everyone agrees and has said as much that we need to address the problem of illegal immigration. But is this the right way to shine that light? I mean, again, there are many in the, I don't want to say many, but there is a significant number, even within the Republican Party, who are pointing to this and saying this is exactly why we have trouble supporting Donald Trump for president.
Yeah, no, I see that differently. And the point for me is this. If Donald Trump or any Republican, really, let's take the president out of the mix for a minute, and said, well, there's a problem in Springfield, Ohio, with immigrants coming there from Haiti, the whole world would have probably listened for a couple minutes and then moved on to the next topic, whatever it might have been. by talking about it in the way that we've talked about it. And by the way, there is some evidence here of some cultural abnormalities that Haitian people brought to that community. And look, I'm a child of immigrants. I just want to make that clear to you, Chris. We probably don't know each other well, but I'm a first generation American. My parents came here with some cultural differences, and I've experienced some of that. But all that to say that there are some things that have gone on there that are just, you know, have created challenges for the community. So by highlighting some of those things, again, we are talking about the crisis in Haiti in a way that we weren't before. So, you know, look, President Trump, we know what we have with him. He and I, look, obviously I'm a huge fan, maybe his biggest fan in Ohio, but I recognize, as others do, that he's an unconventional non-career politician. So is he always going to be perfectly politically correct? No. Is he going to say things sometimes that are unconventional? Of course. But a lot of us love that about him. He's plain spoken. He's passionate about the country. He's at a point in his life where he's doing this not for himself. I mean, this guy's a billionaire. He doesn't need this life. He doesn't need these challenges in his life. He's doing this because he believes strongly that the country is backsliding, and he's the guy to lead us back to a good place. So, you know, I support it. I support the way he's conducted himself in this campaign. And I got to tell you, I like where he is in Ohio. We feel very confident about a good win here. I've been around Ohio politics for a long time. This was a purple state until President Donald J. Trump came along. And now they're pretty much writing us off as a red state. So we'll take Donald Trump here in Ohio.
you mentioned the polls. It was interesting. We had the story yesterday that the margin in Ohio post-debate has narrowed a bit. It's gone from Trump up by 10 to Trump up by 8. And the latest Reuters Ipsos poll post-debate shows Kamala Harris with about a 5-point lead, 47-42%. So just outside the margin of error. What has to happen between now and election, these next 52 days, in order to seal the deal for President Trump and, by extension, all of the down ballot races as well?
Well, I think we just got to keep talking about the issues the American people care about. We too often in the political game, and I mean, we're all guilty of it. We get off the issues that face everyday Americans. And what we should be talking about are things like inflation. It costs more. It still costs more. Your grocery bill costs a whole lot more now than it did even 2 and 3 years ago. The Biden-Harris plan, there is no plan. They've got no plan to fix it, nothing to drive down the cost of energy. We should be talking about, you know, what it costs to send your kid to college. You know, if you want to have your child go on to higher education, those costs are exploding. Even if you want your child to go to some kind of a trade program, those costs are exploding. So everything is cost more. It's crushing middle-class families. If we talk about our solutions to those problems, we'll win this race. Immigration, again, is a terrible crisis for the United States. And it's not just affecting border states. It's affecting communities like Springfield, Ohio. So if we stay focused on those things, the American people are smarter, frankly, than a lot of my friends in the political operating class give them credit for being. And we should be telling them this is how our policies will improve your life as an American and how and fix our country, which, by the way, about 65% of the people when polled suggest the country's going in the wrong direction. When you have a country, when you see polling numbers like that, basically the American people by a large, almost supermajority saying we're on the wrong track, that's good for the party out of power. So, you know, I like where we are in this race. I mean, Donald Trump, his numbers are better now than they were in his last two cycles, and typically he outperforms the polling. So, you know, look, we're going to run through the tape here in Ohio and everywhere else, but we feel like we're in pretty good shape.
It is a fair point that Donald Trump does have a tendency to prove the pollsters wrong historically. Setting aside the presidential race, I do want to ask you about, the down ballot races, the race for Senate. And this has been an interesting one. Obviously, a lot of people around the country watching this race between Sherrod Brown and Bernie Moreno. The latest numbers that I saw, again, polling-wise, gave Senator Brown a bit of an edge in that. What about Sherrod Brown has made him in such, as you point out, this has become such a reliably red state, and yet Sherrod Brown has consistently been a very tough Democrat to defeat. What makes it such a challenge for Republicans to flip that seat?
Well, he's a career politician with high name identification and, you know, a kind of an entrenched machine here in Ohio. But look, this guy's been in office for something like 47 years, Sherrod Brown. He's a classic career politician. He is also Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's biggest supporter in this state. He votes with Kamala Harris and Joe Biden's policies 98.5% of the time. This is a committed left-wing guy. This is not a senator like Joe Manchin. He's a senator like Elizabeth Warren. He is someone who's policies are out of step with Ohio. His rhetoric and his commercials, where he, you know, puts himself in commercials with Donald Trump, are laughable to anyone who objectively reviews his record. He is a committed extremist left-wing guy, and he comes back to Ohio every 6 years and spends millions trying to convince us otherwise. Here's where that race is. They have literally, and I say they, Sherrod Brown and his allies have spent tens of millions of dollars in this campaign, and they find themselves in essentially a dead heat against someone they thought they would be able to put away with television advertising. That has not happened. Bernie Moreno is among the hardest working candidates I've ever witnessed. He connects super well. He's got a wonderful life story. He has a fresh perspective here in Ohio, and he's someone who will go to Washington, D.C. and be supportive of President Trump and his policies. Sherrod Brown is not supportive of those policies. He is supportive of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. So we like our chances there as well, but that race is one to watch. And I'll concede it's a close race. Mm-hmm. We know it's a close race, but we think as the polls narrow and as you get closer to people casting ballots, you know, the undecided voters are going to break for the challenger in that race, and that'll be Bernie Moreno.
The countdown is on, and we will all be watching, as will the rest of the country, with these races. Again, Ohio GOP Chairman Alex Tarantafilou is with us this morning. He will be addressing the Hancock County Republicans' First Friday Luncheon later on today. Alex, thanks very much for taking the time for us this morning. We appreciate it.
Chris, I look forward to being in Hancock County and Findlay this morning, or excuse me, later today. And thanks for the chance to be with you today. Have a great weekend.
So it is Friday the 13th, and as we were mentioning earlier on in the program, many of the superstitions that we associate with Friday the 13th actually have their roots in ancient times, and yet we still kind of hang on to them. And I know that there are some people that actually buy into all of those superstitions, but I think for most of us, it's just something, you know, that we talk about and we joke about. It's just more kind of a fun thing. I mean, you know, do we really know anybody who is truly afraid of the number 13 or walking under a ladder or, you know, throw salt over your shoulder? You know, those kinds of things. Do we really buy into that? Does anybody really buy into that? But it's all in good fun in most cases. And one thing that is true about society today, for whatever reason, we do love we have this fascination with creepy things and spooky things and scary things. You know, like the black cats crossing your path and all of that. These spine-tingling tales that we love to share around the campfire. And in honor of Friday the 13th, not long ago, we got the chance to speak with author James Willis. We've spoken to him a number of times about his big book of Ohio ghost stories.
One of the magical things for me personally about ghost stories is that everybody has one, whether or not they actually believe in ghosts. They all have those stories that they like to share. And in all honesty, those ghost stories become sort of the part of our childhood and our upbringing. You know, we've all kind of, you know, sat around on a dark and stormy night and shared ghost stories to give each other a chill, you know, not really caring, if you will, whether or not that story was true. So, I mean, ghost stories are all around us. Now, the ones that are the most intriguing to me are the ones that you start digging into and you find these little historical facts and nuggets that you're like, wow, there actually might be something to this particular story. So there's interesting sort of dichotomy between those stories.
And how many of the stories in the book would fall into that category of, yeah, there might be some kernel of truth to this?
Roughly between 50 and 75% of them. I mean, that's kind of a wide range.
Yeah, but that,
again, you know, whenever you're talking about this physical idea of, you know, proof, if you will, of a ghost, mm-hmm. you know, that's very hard to actually come by because
sure.
there's sort of ghost encounters or people that you talk to that believe that they've actually encountered a ghost. It's a very personal experience for them. And in their hearts, they know that they encountered a ghost. But if you were to tell that story to, say, 10 different people,
right,
maybe half of them are actually going to believe that that was a ghost. But, yeah, there were a lot of stories within the book that you started digging into, finding that, okay, well, somebody did actually pass away in this particular spot.
Yeah.
Or, you know what, this actually did occur here. So it could possibly lead to a haunting.
Yeah, there might be something to it. And yeah. I guess the reason I ask is because one of the things that, and I guess I didn't realize this or maybe didn't appreciate it. Maybe it's one of those things that you live your whole life in a state and you don't realize. But there are an awful lot of those types of instances throughout the state.
Yeah, there really are. As I said, you know, it's, for every story that I hear about, you know, Bloody Mary or a guy with a hook for an arm or something like that, you still will come across a story where you're like, wow, an incident really did occur in this location. Or the, you know, this house is supposedly haunted by, you know, a man with a mustache, for example. And you go and do the research and you find out, well, you know, that the owner who actually built the house many mm-hmm. years ago actually did have a mustache. So, yeah, those, as I said, those are the little nuggets that when you come across them, you're like, wow, there might be something to this.
Yeah, and maybe somebody did actually die under mysterious circumstances. And I mean, there are all types of, and there are within the book some from our area, Northwest Ohio.
Yeah, what we actually did is we wanted to kind of make sure that the entire state of Ohio is represented, because it's very interesting when you look at the ghost stories, kind of based on the region or the part of Ohio that you're in, you get different types of stories. You know, so it was kind of interesting, and that's why we divided the book up sort of by sections, you know, so that you can kind of flip it to a section that you live in currently or grew up in and actually see if there's any, you know, long-standing ghost stories in your particular area.
So probably folks will read a story or two and say, hey, I know that story. I remember hearing that story when I was younger, or maybe something very similar. And that's, you know, that's the other thing. I think every community, when I was growing up, we had the glowing tombstone in the cemetery in my hometown. And what I've come to learn now, of course, when we were kids, that was pretty creepy. Now come to find out that every community has one of those. Every community has a dead man's curve or crybaby bridge, all of those things.
Yeah, and again, but still, those are one of the things that fascinates me whenever I go out and sort of do presentations or book signings, and I have people come up to me and they tell me, well, you know, I thought I live near the only crybaby bridge in Ohio. I thought it was the real one. But yet it's very interesting to hear sort of their version of the story, mm-hmm. because in their version, they've kind of localized the story. So they take aspects so it sounds like their bridge is the real bridge. And that's what I actually find the most fascinating. I always say that, you know, really good ghost stories never die. They just sort of mutate every couple of years. So
yeah.
It's always interesting to hear how the real crybaby bridge story has changed
and
been localized all across the state, well, in the Midwest, really.
And what is really fascinating to me is our fascination with these types of stories. How, you know, regardless of how much truth there is to them, whether there may be a kernel of truth or maybe they are just tall tales that have been passed down from one generation to the next, it's truly amazing our fascination with these.
It is indeed. It's something that goes back many, many years. And I always tell people that regardless of whether or not the ghost stories that you're telling are true, they do become part of your life. And part of, you know, for most people, it's part of their childhood. It's part of their, you know, their bringing up, especially when they start hitting, you know,
yeah,
Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts and going to camp out.
Sure.
And, you know, the teenagers, you know, that's part of, you know, our culture, and as I said, it becomes part of your childhood.
And really, in some cases, kind of part of the community. Those stories do certainly become that. Do you have put you on the spot here. Do you have a favorite from the book? I mean, are there ones that stand out for you?
Yeah, there was actually a lot of them that stood out. I mean, the Moonville Tunnel is always a great story to me because, you've got the idea of, you know, a ghost that's involved with this old, but it ties into the whole idea of a literal ghost town. Moonville, you know, no longer exists other than the tunnel and a small cemetery. So you've got this combination of history and ghost lore coming together, which is just fascinating to me. Mansfield Reformatory, I mean, the old abandoned prison.
Yeah.
That was really kind of creepy to be walking through. And then, you know, something a bit closer to you guys is Reaver's Passing, which is over near Arcadia, which has got this sort of spook light, again, tying in the idea of an old railroad guy who was hit by the train there, walking alongside the tracks with his lantern. So, you know, those, again, the stories that you're cut, they're not just random ghost stories. You've got this little bit of history inside there that I think just adds just a right bit of flavor for a ghostly tale.
That's a good point, because in today's day and age, that is one way that we do connect with communities past, and we hear a little bit about the history of the community through those ghost stories. Whether we realize it or not, there's a little bit of a history lesson in there. Do you have a website in conjunction with the book, by the way?
strangeandspookyworld.com.
We have that linked up at our webpage, goodmornings.net. We do love those creepy, spooky, spine-tingling tales to share around the campfire, especially this time of year, Friday the 13th and the upcoming Halloween season. Our conversation with James Willis about his big book of Ohio ghost stories. Again, goodmornings.net. Happy Friday the 13th. It's another great Friday evening for high school football. Maybe a little bit warm at kickoff, low 80s, right around 81 degrees at the start of the game. We'll drop into the mid-70s by halftime and low 70s by the end of the game tonight. Trojans got off the schneid last week by handing Southview their first loss of the season. And this week, they'll look to even up their record at Oregon Clay. Earlier this week on the Coach's Corner, host John Marshall spoke with Findlay head coach Stephan Adams.
Feeling better about things after the first win?
Yeah, no, a win definitely always helps for our kids. It really reassures them that the work they're putting in, there is a positive result that can come out of it, right? You know, we try to get that back to that, building that resilience up, good, bad, thick or thin. You know, we want to bounce back and, you know, want to accept the challenge and embrace the challenge, but you know, losing our quarterback and then having a roller coaster game like Lima, you know, really tested our culture. And I think the kids responded really well this past week.
Sean Hines got you off to a flying start, returning the opening kickoff 85 yards, yep, plus or minus for a touchdown. That certainly moved the needle right out of the box.
Yeah, he's an explosive athlete for us. We kind of figured they were going to keep the ball on the ground. They've shown that all year long. And he had the opportunity to do it and took it to the house. That was a great energy jumper for us right away.
Landon Eckelberry, your freshman quarterback, stepped things up a notch this week. Just a fraction under 70% passing, 163 yards on 23 attempts, a touchdown through the air, two with his feet. Excellent work from that young man as he continues to get acclimated to varsity football, because he is still a freshman.
Yeah, no, he's a young guy, brings a different dimension. I've really been proud of all of our quarterbacks. And you know, Riley came in at a crazy time, and then, you know, Landon's getting an opportunity as well, too. They both have different skill sets. And then, you know, we have some young guys coming up as well, too. So I think our quarterback room is really healthy. And guys have some opportunities to grow and get better. And Landon has taken the reps and done a good job of improving. You know, from Lima to Southview this past week, what you saw was a little more confidence. Okay, he was hitting maybe some of those throws that he didn't see the week before. And that's the growth that we want each game, is he's seeing things and things are slowing down for him a little bit each game.
And as nice it is to bask in that success, you have already been working hard getting ready for Oregon Clay on Friday night. As I recall, they have a pretty good quarterback,
yep,
as it seems they always do in the green and gold. They put up 38 or more in winning each of their first two games before coming back down to earth with just 14 last week. But Whitmer has a way of doing that to folks.
Yeah, no, they ran into a really good athletic, big Whitmer team. And actually, you know, we watched the film. The score might not have been really kind of a reflection of how the game went. You know, I think they were in it for a while, and then things kind of unraveled at that point in time. But we have our hands full. We know that. I'm not going to sugarcoat it and say I don't think they probably just – it's just the way that we feel. We know that people, the awareness of us, they probably don't look at us the same way they looked at Whitmer. You know, so we embrace and accept that challenge and are excited to go up there and compete. We've had some unique experiences every time we go there. So I think our guys have known kind of through the course of the week of how things go that kind of expect anything, be ready for anything that comes and adapt. And I think we kind of handle things that way during practice, kind of just throwing some different curveballs as far as the practice format goes. whatever happens, just adapt. And they did a good job at that.
You've been hitting hard on the theme of getting better each week, each game.
Yeah, stack days.
What must that look like to bring the win home on Friday?
Yeah, it's very easy to start looking ahead to Friday. You know, everybody's excited about playing the game, but really it's what you do each day, you know, and every day it's been kind of a reminder. Each week, really, you know, are you taking care of your bodies, right? You know, when we get our lifts in, are you still lifting hard? Are you stretching? You know, if you got a little nick, a little something going on, you know, are you getting worked out with the athletic trainer? You know, what happens on Saturday, the day after the game, is just as important as what happens on Friday night. So every day, just stacking days, 1% better. Just focus on one day at a time, and then hopefully we're prepared to go out there Friday night and make plays.
Findlay at Oregon Clay tonight. Our coverage of the Trojans and Eagles begins this evening at 6:10 with Tonight in High School Football here on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. Other action from around the area on our family of stations on 100.5 WKXA tonight and at WKXA.com. It's BBC action. Pandora Gilboa is at Lipsick, the Battle of Putnam County, and in the WBL on 106.3 The Fox and 106.3thefox.com, Elida is at Ottawa Glandorf this evening. And you can follow all of the area action on the WFIN scoreboard page, powered by ScoreStream and presented by Owens Community College. It is updated throughout the evening in real time with all of the games, and we've got the link up at our webpage, goodmornings.net.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
We begin in the international file this morning. The British policing prime minister, Dame Diana Johnson, and she's the policing prime minister of Great Britain. That's important to the story. That's very germane to the story. So she's giving a speech on theft when her own purse was stolen. Dame Diana was attending a conference for senior police officers in a hotel conference room on Tuesday when her valuables were swiped, when her purse was stolen. That's a brave criminal right there, to make off with the purse of the policing prime minister while she's attending a conference of senior police officers. All of the police officers in the building, and somehow, I think maybe they've got a little work to do in Great Britain on their law enforcement. Too many town centers and high streets across the country have been gripped by an epidemic of antisocial behavior, theft, and shoplifting, she said. Even as her own purse, her own valuables, we're heading out the door. A 56-year-old man has been arrested on suspicion of burglary. At least they got the guy. But that takes guts. That takes some chutzpah. steal the police, basically the police commissioner's purse while she's speaking about crime. Elsewhere in the broken news this morning, that may be my favorite story, but this one's pretty good too. A Michigan man who couldn't bear to part with his car came up with what he thought was a foolproof plan to keep the repo man from taking it away. He planted a bomb in it. 45-year-old is accused of placing a propane gas tank in the front seat of the car, along with some copper wire running from the tank to somewhere under the dashboard, while strapping another tank to the driver's side wheel and running some copper wire underneath the vehicle. This is according to local news reports there in Michigan. The scheme did manage to get the attention of the local bomb squad. Police closed down a portion of the area, but the bomb squad determined the entire thing was a hoax. The tanks weren't really connected to anything that could cause an explosion. The suspect now faces a formal charge, though, of planting an explosive device or a device representing an explosive. And yes, the car was ultimately repossessed anyway. A I can't have it, nobody can have it. I'm going to plant a bomb in the car to keep the repo man away. Interesting strategy there. In other broken news this morning, a mom in Nashville is accused of brandishing a gun after her daughter was involved in a fight on the school bus. Wow. Metro police say the driver of a bus carrying students from McGavick High School pulled over after someone in the group that was involved in the altercation sprayed other students with pepper spray. The mother of a girl who was sprayed then arrived on the scene and waved a pistol around after the driver would not let her on the bus. This according to the official police report. Cops say she did not point the weapon at anyone, but she was still taken into custody on a charge of reckless endangerment. Wow. Heard of defending your kids, but man, oh man. Put that gun away, Mom. In Fairbanks, Alaska, this is a state where we don't normally get a whole lot of broken news, but when we do, it's good stuff. Fairbanks, Alaska, an old Facebook post is causing a stir in the North Star Borough School Board. One community member brought up a photo of one of the board members, Bobby Burgess, that shows him wearing only an apron with his backside exposed. He's a member of the school board. Posted a photo on Facebook. He was wearing only an apron with his backside exposed. Now, the photo is old. It was posted like 3 years ago, but a printed version of the photo was shared at a recent board meeting, and some are now calling for Mr. Burgess to step down from his position. He joined the school board last year, so the photo predates his service on the school board, and he said that sharing his photo is an invasion of his privacy. But hey, it was on Facebook! I mean, it's not like she hacked into his computer or his mobile device and got this photo. It was on Facebook! Wouldn't you think, if you were running for a school board or appointed to school board, I don't know how he ended up on the school board, but wouldn't you think that one of the first things that you might do is take down any nude photos of yourself on the internet? I'm just saying, that would probably be one of the first things that I would think about doing in that case. But he's upset about the whole thing. And finally, in the broken news this morning, a story of David Moot from Cape Cod, Massachusetts. He recently purchased a home there in Cape Cod. Beautiful Cape Cod. Purchased a home for $395,000, despite warnings that the house may soon fall off a cliff. Home has a beautiful view, but sits just 25 feet from a crumbling cliff. But Mr. Moot says he just wants to enjoy the home while it lasts, for however long that might be. And $395,000 for a home in Cape Cod is a bargain. The house was originally listed for nearly $1.2 million. So he paid just a third of the asking price to secure the home. So, I mean, when you get that kind of a discount, hey, if it falls off the cliff, eh. You didn't pay that much for it anyway, relatively speaking. Mr. Moot is quoted as saying, "It is going to eventually fall in the ocean, and it may or may not be in my lifetime. Nobody really knows. So I'm going to enjoy it while it lasts." Now that is the right attitude, I think, right there. The right attitude. Get a Cape Cod home for less than 400 grand. That is a bargain right there. Just has that one little flaw to it. There you go. That is today's broken news report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Get the ins and outs of sports gambling strategies each weekend on WFIN. On the Money provides you with the best bets and analysis so you're ready for all the action. Join Dave Biddle and Scotty Vegas for information on betting lines as well as a fair share of predictions. With a rapid rise in sports betting interest around the country, you won't want to miss On the Money. Sunday mornings at 10 on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. A new survey of 2,000 women finds that Gen Z and millennials are more stressed about getting older than Gen Xers and boomers are. This younger generation more stressed out about aging. 40% of Gen Zers, 38% of millennials feel older than their age. And 76% say that they worry about aging gracefully. Almost half of the women in the survey say they notice the first signs of aging by age 40. So thought that was kind of interesting. And maybe part of it, this is speaking of aging, a separate survey which found that Americans will ask someone to repeat themselves about three times a day. You know, your hearing starts to go. Ask people to repeat themselves about three times a day or 1,095 times per year. And the average respondent says they will only ask twice before pretending to have heard what the other person has said. I have to admit, I've done that before. I just pretend. What did you say? Oh, yeah. I got it. Whatever. Aging gracefully. That's what it's all about. My wife, Kyra, has joined us in the studio this morning with another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. Good morning, dear.
Good morning.
So today we have, and this is really cool, we have a whole collection of recipes featuring the flavors of fall.
Yes. And getting ready.
These are yummy recipes.
Yes.
For all of those things, they're going to be in season very soon.
Before we know it.
And we begin with a recipe for Million Dollar Spaghetti Squash Pasta.
Yes.
Million Dollar.
Yes.
So I don't know why.
I don't know.
Million Dollar.
Million Dollar.
The squash thing is the thing that we're focusing on here.
Yes,
squash
we are.
Pasta.
Yes. Yeah. So this is one large spaghetti squash, a half a pound of ground beef, one tablespoon of dried minced onion, 24-ounce marinara sauce, 1 cup of cottage cheese, 1.5 cups of shredded mozzarella cheese divided, 1/4 cup of grated Parmesan cheese, 1 teaspoon of Italian seasoning, and salt and pepper to taste. So preheat your oven to 400 degrees. Carefully cut the spaghetti squash in half lengthwise. I used a spoon to discard the seeds and membranes. I used a large spoon.
Scoop it out.
It was really easy. Place the squash halves in a baking dish. I sprinkled mine with a little bit of olive oil and seasoned it with a little bit of salt. Turned it upside down so it's flat on the cookie sheet.
Right.
Then bake the squash for 50 to 60 minutes until it is tender, just fork tender. So, and mine was about 50 minutes and that was good. So let it cool for about 10 minutes. Then use a fork to loosen and shred the squash. Meanwhile, heat in a medium skillet over medium heat your beef and your minced onion, breaking up the beef, cook through and brown for about 7 to 10 minutes. Strain any of that excess grease from the pan with a paper towel, then add your marinara sauce and simmer for 2 to 3 minutes. Then add in your cottage cheese, your Italian dressing, your salt, your pepper, salt and pepper, Parmesan cheese, and just 1 cup of your mozzarella. Then pour half of the marinara sauce mixture over the spaghetti squash halves and use a fork to kind of stir the sauce into your squash.
Okay.
Then spread the ricotta mixture on top. Then rest than the rest of the marinara sauce. So you're kind of going to like do layers.
All right.
So you're going to do like a thing of your meat mixture. Then you're going to do a thing of your cheese, and then another, and then you're going to mix that up, and then you're going to top it with the rest of your stuff, then add the rest of your cheese, and then put it in the oven for 10 to 20 minutes until it's nice and melted. And then if you want to make your cheese a little bit more bubbly on top, you can mm-hmm. put it under the broiler, but you don't have to do that. I did, okay. and it was pretty good.
Okay. So the $1 million spaghetti squash yep. pasta.
Yes, it was really good. Right. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Good stuff there. It's a little long and involved, though. Yes, I mean, this is not a quick recipe. No. It's not necessarily difficult, but this is going to take a little bit
this
of
is
time.
The big thing is letting the spaghetti squash cook. So figure something else to do out to do while for that to cook.
You've got plenty of time.
Take a little while.
We have to go along with that a recipe for pumpkin cornbread.
Yes.
Pumpkin cornbread.
Yes. So this is 1 cup of all-purpose flour, 3/4 cup of yellow cornmeal, not the coarse ground, 2 teaspoons of baking powder, 1/2 teaspoon of baking soda, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1 teaspoon of pumpkin pie spice, 1/2 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1/4 cup of vegetable oil, 1 cup of pumpkin puree, 3/4 cup milk, 1/2 cup of granulated sugar, 2 tablespoons of honey, and 2 large eggs. So preheat your oven to 350 degrees. Grease a 9 by 9 inch square baking dish in a large bowl. Combine your flour, your cornmeal, your baking powder, baking soda, salt, and spices. In a separate bowl, whisk your oil, your pumpkin, your milk, your sugar, your honey, and your eggs. Then pour the wet ingredients into the dry ingredients. Mix that all up. Pour the batter into your prepared pan and bake for approximately 23 to 27 minutes. Insert a toothpick in the center. It should come out clean, no raw batter. And if it does, then you're
back
good
into
to go.
The oven it goes.
Yeah.
If not.
Yep. And then cool slightly, serve warm with your butter and honey.
So, really, this is kind of your basic cornbread recipe, just adding a little pumpkin to it.
Mm-hmm.
A little pumpkin flavor.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. All right. And for dessert, and I thought you were actually going to do the. Pumpkin cookies that you made
I hadn't done those. That was my first time doing those, and they are very, very good.
Yeah,
so
they really
I will
are.
Be
they're
doing
like,
that
they're
recipe.
Like pumpkin snickerdoodles.
Yes, correct.
And so correct. Be looking for that recipe.
Oh my goodness,
coming up
yummy.
Here very soon.
Yes,
that is good. But this one is also good.
Yes,
and we are coming up on apple season.
Yes.
So we have an easy apple crisp recipe.
Yes. So this is 3 pounds of apples, 1/2 cup of granulated sugar, 1 teaspoon of fresh lemon juice, 1 tablespoon of cornstarch, 1 tablespoon of ground cinnamon divided, 1/2 cup of butter, 1 cup of rolled oats, 1 cup of all-purpose flour, 1/3 cup of brown sugar packed, 1 teaspoon of cinnamon, and 1/4 teaspoon of salt. So preheat your oven to 350 degrees. Spray a 13 by 9 inch baking dish with cooking spray. Peel the apples with a vegetable peeler and then core and chop them into about 1 inch chunks. Place the apples and the granulated sugar, the lemon, the cornstarch, the 2 teaspoons of the ground cinnamon in a large bowl. Stir all that until combined, then pour the apple mixture into the prepared baking dish and spread into an even layer. Melt the butter in a medium bowl in the microwave for 40 to 60 minutes, depending on
seconds.
Your... Yeah, our seconds. Sorry.
Put it in the microwave for 40 to 60 minutes.
That would not
that
be
would
pretty.
Be, that would be
that
bad.
Would be ugly.
that would be
sorry.
Very bad.
Yes, seconds. So,
yes.
And it could even be less, depending on your microwave. So add the flour, the oats, the flour, the brown sugar, 1 teaspoon of cinnamon, and salt, and stir until well combined. Sprinkle the crumbled evenly over the apple mixture. Bake for 50 to 60 minutes until bubbly and golden brown, and the apples are your desired tenderness. So if you like them more tender, almost like applesauce, then mm-hmm. you're going to bake them in a little bit longer. If you like them a little bit crunchier, then maybe you want to go 45 minutes.
Okay.
So completely up to you. Cool on a wire rack for a minimum of 15 minutes and serve warm and enjoy.
Maybe have some ice cream with that too.
Ice cream or Cool Whip or, yep.
You mentioned, letting the desired tenderness of the apples be your guide on it, because there's really not anything there that is dangerous.
Right. No.
In terms of the
Everything else is going to be cooked. So it's just your desired tenderness for your apple crisp. So I like mine a little bit crispier. I don't like the mushy.
See, and I'm... I don't like really mushy apples, but not quite as tender in my apple crisp as you do. But anyway, so great fall flavors there with the apples, the pumpkin, the squash, the recipes for the $1 million spaghetti squash pasta, the pumpkin cornbread, and the easy apple crisp are all posted on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page at Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook, correct?
Yep.
All right, so make sure you follow that.
I just saw them.
Yeah. Make sure you follow that page for all of those great recipes, and we have it linked up at goodmornings.net as well. My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the program at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. Coming up Monday on the program, Finley Mayor Christina Mern will join us to discuss the questions and suspicions around the city's growing immigrant population and the additional strain on local resources that comes with it. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.